So, Joe, how did you get interested in Flora Thompson?
Well, it was because I got interested in local history in my village. And that was because I was asked to write a community play on a historical subject. Before then, I wasn't really very interested in local history. But once I got the bug, I wondered what else I could do with local history. And I discovered Flora Thompson because, sad to say, I'd never heard of her or likewise to Candleford. My wife had, but I hadn't. But I remember someone in Greyshot saying to me, "If you want to do the history of Greyshot, you ought to know that the postmistress became a bit famous later in her life." And that started me off.
Yeah, so you then did some research.
I did a lot of research, yes, because unlike really with Luck Rise, it was nearer to the time and you had records and people who could remember things. And so I went through things like censuses and things like directories, local directories. And what I tried to do was I wanted to know whether this book, Heatherly, that she'd written, which basically is the fourth part of Luck Rise to Candleford, which she never published. I wanted to know whether I could regard it as a pretty true statement of what was going on round about my way in, say, 1900 thereabouts, or whether I should throw it in the bin and say it's a load of rubbish. And so I dug around, and I reckon I could find. I mean, as ever, she writes in pseudonyms. You know that, in Luck Rise to Candleford, everybody has a pseudonym. She's Laura for a start. She just carried on with the same pseudonym. She was Laura in Heatherly too. But I was able to identify, I reckon, 80% of the people that she was talking about and put real names to them. And places too. I could identify pretty much most of the places that she was talking about with my local knowledge, which was fascinating.
Yeah. So where we left the story before is that she was in Frankford, though it's Candleford
Yes.
Green, and she left Candleford Green in, I think, 1897, something like that.
Well, we think it was after the Queen's Diamond Jubilee because she mentions that in Luck Rise to Candleford.
Yeah. And then she went somewhere, but ended up in Greyshot in
In
1898.
Greyshot, yes. Yes, in just in Hampshire. She got the train from Waterloo to Haslemere Station. She was expecting to get met there by her new employer, but he didn't turn up. And so she walked all the way up and over, if anybody knows that area, up the hill over Hindhead and into Greyshot. And we've got a picture of the road that she'd have walked along round about that time. And the picture was taken in 1900. And we can see the shop, the post office that she was would have been going to. And somewhere in the distance on this picture, there's a lady coming towards us. And wouldn't it be nice to think that was actually Flora caught in the photograph?
And so she'd gone from one village to another,
She'd
but
gone
they
to a completely different village because Greyshot
right.
was new. I mean, about 20 years before that, it was nothing. There was nothing there. It was heathland. But it all grew because the railway came to Haslemere and eminent men discovered that the air up on Hindhead was as pure as that of the Alps. And so they all moved in and started building houses up there. But of course, in those days, you needed resources, you needed servants, you needed people to come and serve you. And there was nobody around. So the village of Greyshot really grew to serve the people, the eminent people up on Hindhead. And they had the post office.
And some of these people we still know today.
We do. And isn't it interesting because Flora doesn't mention them by name? I think it was the civil servant attitude, you know, of keeping confidentiality. Arthur Conan Doyle was one, George Bernard Shaw was another. They don't get the name, they don't get named, but we know who they are.
And
And she
we
gives very good descriptions of them.
and she saw George Bernard Shaw speak. She went to
Oh,
meetings with
yes.
him.
Well, not only that, but Arthur Conan Doyle was in the chair. And of course, you've got the arch Tory and the arch socialist of the day together in a meeting. And that must have been fireworks, yes.
But she was working in a post office there, so one post office job to the next, and that was the Hertfords.
Well, yes, I know it was the Chapmans. She called them Hertford, I think, because they were born in Hertfordshire. So you get to know sometimes why she gave people the pseudonyms that she did. Walter Chapman, very complex character. He was a master craftsman, a great carpenter. It's said that previously in Australia, he'd helped carve the doors of the Melbourne Parliament. But also, he'd got sunstroke out there, according to his family. And he, ever since when he came back to England, he was a little bit gone in the head a bit, sadly. And after Flora left their employment, he stabbed his wife to death and was committed to Broadmoor for the rest of his life.
And the and she recounts that actually so she was staying with them.
Well, she was staying with them, but she'd left by the time he actually committed the crime.
But she notes that there's some that these trucks she's in her in Heatherley, she notes these troubling occur
Oh,
in
yeah.
various incidents that seem to be leading up to something ominous.
Everybody knew about it in Greatort if you read the records. Yes.
So that was a very tricky time for her,
Yes.
and having to and but she then moved to new lodgings. She found
She did.
some.
She managed to find lodgings. Yes, he fired a gun out of the window one night, and that made her think, I'm getting out of here. She managed to find new lodgings, which again we've identified and put a blue plaque on the building.
So from that point on, she had a bit of independence, a sense of being
Yes, she did, which she loved. She wasn't thought well of in Victorian times, a young independent girl going around and meeting strange people in the middle of the common and having talks with that old gentleman and things like that. She had a few tears, I believe, because of the attitude certain people took to her.
But Mr. Forshaw was one of
Mr.
those.
Forshaw, interesting character. And again, I think I know who he was. I think it was Mr. Volkman, and I think I know where he's buried. And she says that the Sunday after he was buried, she went down and put some red roses on his grave. And when we did our play about Flora Thompson, I got the character who's going to play Flora to actually go and lay some red roses on that very spot.
So he does seem like a quite he's had a quite a, he was an elderly gentleman, but he'd
Yes,
had
he
quite a
was.
colourful life.
Indeed, yes. There's a big game hunter in Africa. And he used to feed her with guava jelly and little snacks. And yeah, she went around there quite often, apparently.
And feed her with books as well.
And books, yes, and information, yes.
So I mean again and there's something she notes rather the sadness that when he died she had her, it would have been lovely to have thought that she would have been able to perhaps have some of those books but
Yes, but they all went past her front door and she couldn't get any of them. And she said he had a butterfly collection that went to the local museum, and which would have been Haslemere. And they do have a butterfly collection, but they don't know who gave it to them, unfortunately.
She also you mentioned this new village and it's got this exotic bunch of new people in it so they're also the Jeromes.
Well, I don't. They're the ones I really don't know whether they existed. That was a chapter that she never put in the final version of her book, but it was found in her. It was Jill Lindsay, her biographer, went over there to her archives were in Austin, Texas, by the way. She went over there and she described as looking through Flora's waste paper basket, is the way she described it to me, and she found this missing chapter, which I inserted into the book, where I thought it ought to go.
It is giving quite a telling insight into, well, a new way of thinking, a new way of behaving, these
Oh, yes.
Bohemians.
Well, the most interesting person in her life really was the one she called Brownlow. And again, I know who he is because I followed that up. And marriage was mentioned, but it didn't come to anything. And he was his real name is William Elwes. And I've spoken to his would have been great niece, I think. And she said, "Well, the Elwes family were a bit snobby at the time, and to marry the an assistant postmistress in an unknown Hampshire village wouldn't probably not gone down very well with the family." But I have to tell you that I followed up Mr. Elwes, and I followed up where he retired to, and I've met the man who now has that house in Pett in West Sussex near Hastings, and he says the word round the village was that he was probably gay. So
Well,
that probably was the reason that he said he couldn't marry her.
but nevertheless, again, it's one of these things where she makes interesting friends,
Yes,
and
absolutely.
recounts them, and again,
Indeed.
it's and recording that period of time, and again, it's another nice little thing she seems to have that it seems to be a time when there's I don't know, liberation for women, but certainly a greater opportunity for women to express themselves more freely, buy a bicycle instead of
Yes.
collecting stuff for their
Yes.
bottom drawer for their first
Yes.
christening.
Yes, things were changing, weren't they? And she, I think she records that very well. I have to say, there's a lot of people that read Heatherly are disappointed because it's not like Larkrise. Well, of course it isn't, because it's the same girl, but it's a different village and different times and different place, and that's the reason it's different. But it's just as well written.
And but although she's recounting these more liberated times and her generally her enjoy a pleasure at being independent, she does end up getting married. She meets
Well,
John.
she does, and we think they met. We think they both like going out to book readings in the evening, and the 1901 census tells us that she was in Yateley and he was in Aldershot. But isn't it interesting because his post office records put him down in Bournemouth for all of that period, and it's only because we see the census that we know he wasn't there for in Census Day of 1901, but he was up somewhere near where Flora was. We think that's where they met. They got married in Twickenham, and one assumes she took a short-term job there or something. Then they went down to Bournemouth, where John actually had the post office anyway, and started to have a family there.
Yeah, so Winifred, she was born the same year that they got married.
Yes,
Yeah.
yes, 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 yes.
Yeah.
All was in October. All their three children were born in October. That shows a certain consistency, doesn't
Probably don't want to think about that too
it?
much. But so while she was in Winton near Bournemouth,
Mm.
she was writing.
Yes, I mean, I don't think she ever stopped writing, to be honest, but she was making a bit of money from it, which I think pleased her husband a bit. Winton Library had just opened, and it was one of the earliest libraries in the country to offer open shelf access, so you could go in and pick your own books rather than have to ask for them. And she says how she didn't like to take them back as soon as she'd read them for fear they thought that she was playing around with them because she read them so fast. But I think it was a great resource for her. She was very lucky to live there.
And she entered some writing competitions.
Yes, she was writing for magazines like The Lady and other ones, and she got into competitions. And she also wrote a critic of there was a poem about the sinking of the Titanic that was written, and she did a crit of that. And the author got in touch with her and actually met her once or twice. And I think he was her muse to actually get her to do a bit more in the way of poetry. She thought she was going to be a poet at one time. That was what she thought she was good at. And that was her first book when she got to Lippook, which we'll come to, I guess. Her very first book was published. It's called Bog Myrtle and Pete, and it was poems.
Yeah. Do you think poetry was a good thing for her to do, or was it a bit of a distraction?
Well, I think it's a good thing for all of us authors to do because I think it teaches you how to use words a bit. But that's not to say I think she was the best poet in the world, but they're adequate, and they give us another in interest of hers, another insight into how she worked and what she thought.
But so they've been in Bournemouth, and that's where her,
Hmm.
you know, she started ha they'd started having a family,
Family changed, yes.
and then the First World War broke out,
Yes.
and her brother,
A
who'd been in
brother.
yeah.
Well, he'd been in the army, in the British Army. He's fought in the Boer War and survived that, just. Went to India with the army. Then he got demobbed. And he wanted to make a living on the land, but he found, like so many other people, you couldn't do that in England. My family actually did the same. They immigrated to Canada because they couldn't find anything to do here. He emigrated to Canada, and then at the start of the First World War, he joined the Canadian Army in Winnipeg and came back over to Europe to fight.
And in 1916.
He was killed, sadly. He's quite old for a soldier in those days as well. It's very, very sad. And just after that, Flora's husband decided to move. And out of all the places in the south of England he could have got moved to, he's moved to Lippook, which is just 3 miles from Greyshot. So she came back to her point of entry into Hampshire.
And in this new place, then she joins the Natural History Society.
In Haslemere Museum,
Yeah,
yes.
and starts a correspondence course and
She
continues her
does.
writing.
Yes.
And she gets into and she but she then starts getting into, well, she writes for the Catholic Fireside, is that right?
Well, we don't know why she chose that particular thing. She wasn't a Catholic, or one of her sisters, I believe, was. But it was an output, and she wrote regular columns. Every month she wrote something. She wrote what she called her Peveril paper, which was nature notes, basically, and sort of commentary on what she'd seen and what she thought. And some of those comments were about her life back in Oxfordshire in the early days, but mostly they were about life as it was then in Lippook. And she also wrote some criticisms of very good authors of the day. Now, this was a girl who, on her own admission, had left school having read only the Bible. And here she is making excellent criticism of the good authors of the day. A remarkable woman, completely self-taught.
Yeah. And again, this love of nature, well, love of literature and love of nature, and they're intertwined.
Yes, they are. And although I've met people who are her next door neighbours, and they didn't really know she was a writer, they say. They she had a little room that she went to her study, as she called it, but they didn't know what she did there. But obviously, people did because she was asked to write in 1925 the Guide to Lippook, and that still exists and it's still in publication. Incidentally, the only publication where she doesn't use pseudonyms. And I think she would have made a very good local historian had she stayed in Lippook. I think that's what she would have been known for, locally at least,
Yeah.
but she wouldn't have been known nationally.
But in 1927, her husband,
1927, husband wanted to move again, itchy
right.
feet. He was born in the Isle of Wight. I think he was too far from the sea. He got a nice position down in Dartmouth in Devon, right by the sea, twice the salary. What's not to like? So off he went, and she spun out, according to neighbours, she spun out the selling of the house for as long as she could. And then followed in 1928,
So
and she
that,
never came back. Never came back to Hampshire after that.
and that was the end of the Peveril Papers.
That was the end of the Peveril Papers, but not the Peveril Society, which has her postal writers' circle, which she did. And if anybody has copies of that, by the way, we would like them because they were never put into any archive that we know of, and we've got just one or two that people have found. But yeah, like hen's teeth, they are. If you can get your hands on the Peveril Society magazine, I'd like one.
And they stay in Dartmouth, and John ends up retiring
Yes,
there.
he retires. They move to Brixham just along the coast. And that's basically where she starts, where she writes most of Lark Rise to Candleford. But it wasn't a happy time for her. I mean, her youngest son went down in an Atlantic convoy, was lost to them in 1941. She was right in the middle of writing the second book then, Over to Candleford. And then she wrote Candleford Green. And then she wrote Heatherly, but she didn't submit that for publication, and we don't know why. We don't know why. Perhaps it was about. It was a sad time. She was starting to suffer from angina. The D-Day traffic had gone right through Brixham and a bit disruptive, I guess. And she had the sadness of losing her son in the convoy. She didn't submit it, and she started work on the only other book we people know about, which is Still Glides the Stream, which is not a continuation of Lark Rise to Canterbury. It doesn't mention Laura. It's completely different. Some people prefer it, but most people don't.
I think I've seen it said that perhaps it's the life that she might have liked to have led, that it's a following a character that could have been another her in a different set
Yes,
of
and
circumstances.
there's a certain suspicion that it might have been a real character, and that character, strangely enough, might have moved down to Liss in Hampshire, which is not very far from Lippook, but that's another story.
Yeah. So you gathered all this information, then what have you done with it?
Well, yes, I always think when you gather information as a local historian, you should do all you can with it. That one piece of information, you've taken a lot of time to gather it, see what you can do with it. So I give talks on it. I've written books about it. I republished Heatherly for her because nobody else wanted to. Oxford University Press said they didn't want to. So I said, "Would you mind if I do?" And they said, "No, go ahead." So I do, and it's now my best-selling book. And also, I wrote some plays. I mean, I came into local history because I wrote a play. And so I decided, well, let's do one, or two actually, about Flora. I've done one called Flora's Heatherly, which is based on the book Heatherly about her time in Greyshot. And I've done another one called Flora's Peveril, which is about her time in Lippook. And I'm in the local Amdram group. Unfortunately, they like doing my plays, so I have a captive troupe of actors who will perform these plays. And we're going to do the one about Greyshop. We're going to do it this year in July, locally in East Hampshire.
And I think you're going to have some special visitors as well.
Well, I hope I'm hoping so. I'm hoping I might have one of her biographers from America over. She lives near Chicago. And also the main biographer in England, Gillian, who lives in Somerset. I hope she'll come up for it. And I'm hoping to get Joe Thompson from Buckingham Museum down to see it as well.
I think I might come as well.
And
So,
you might come as well. Well, if you
but.
do, let me know when you're coming, and
And,
I'll give you a show around our area and show you where Flora moved.
so the one thing that seems to strike me from her life is, I mean, we remember her most for these books she wrote late in her life about her earliest period, but it's a life of writing and a life of corresponding with people.
Yes.
Yeah, that seems to
And
matter a lot.
yes, her mother said that she couldn't leave a piece of paper untouched. So it was a bit of a criticism, I think, in the early day. I have to be honest, I think she was lucky with when she submitted Lark Rise. It was just before the Second World War, and I think people wanted that sort of book at that sort of time. I have to say, if someone was trying to push a book like that out now, I doubt if they'd have the same success. But there you go. You have to ride your successes, don't you?
So it does beg the question, how many Floras are out there making very astute observations about the world around them, but are
Oh,
just
yes.
not getting picked up?
Yes, indeed. Mind you, now you can publish for free with Amazon. There's an awful lot of stuff being published these days, not all of it good.
Have to wade through maybe some slop to get to the good
Yeah.
stuff. Well, look, it's been a wonderful thing talking to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.